Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's been a two-week holiday here from the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I hope you didn't, go crazy because of the lack of comedy in your present moment. And my very special guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is another other than the famous... did I say famous? What does that mean? Is that like famous and fabulous at the same time?
I think so, Vinny.
She's Dr. Rima Labo. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Vinny. You're famous too.
Yeah, famous. I've just created a new word of the English language. Come up with my sleep deprivation. It's great. Now. Something I wanted to get your perspective on today, Dr. Rima, is fluoride. I remember having a conversation with you a while ago where people were talking to you and saying that they want to stop kowtowing to the New World Order and the scumbaggery and so on and so forth. And first question you asked them is, do you use fluoridated toothpaste? And suddenly... it suddenly makes sense to them. Oh, my God. There's actually toxins and stuff added to pretty much everything, and it's actually quite a lot of effort in order to stop it from affecting you. And just recently, Hamilton, New Zealand, voted to put the fluoride back in after having
it removed for... the fluoride back in?
Yep. It was about a 23% voter turnout, and of those 23%... 70% of them voted to put the fluoride back in. So if you do the arithmetic, that means 16.1% of the population decided that it was a good idea to poison the other 83.9% of the population against their will.
Well, shame on the other 83.9% of the 89.3% of the population that weren't there with their voter registrations in their hand and froth on their non-fluoridated lips. Shame on them.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you kind of expect this sort of result. The fluoride was taken out because nine councillors, excluding the district health board people who had a conflict of interest and recused themselves from the vote, voted 7-1 to take fluoride out of the water. That was because the Fluoride Action Network was able to get a couple of doctors and dentists to give a presentation specifically to those council members. Then they called for a referendum. So instead of just talking to seven or eight people and giving them the facts and figures, suddenly you have an entire city-wide campaign that you have to run. And the District Health Board spent $47,000 on propaganda. Big, big. Here was the funny thing. In Waikato Hospital, Dr. Raymer, they had screens in pretty much every room. And playing on a loop was a four-minute promotion of fluoride video that has all the classic propaganda. Oh, it's safe and effective. Oh, it's not that much. It can't harm you. Well, hold on a second. If you're telling us it's safe and effective, why do you go on to say that it can't harm you because it's just such a small amount? Are you suggesting that if you did two teaspoons in a bathtub instead of the one which you're claiming, that suddenly it wouldn't be happy and safe and effective anymore? Hmm? But it's yeah. It's on loop in every single hospital room. Huge, massive.
Are you aware that you are applying rational thinking to a political situation? Clearly, your two break was not long enough.
My mistake.
Because you still have the absurd notion that we're dealing with logic, with truth, and with genuine interest for well-being. Vinny, my lad, take a rest.
I know.
You'll feel better.
In fact, I mentioned that on a recording. I said we were arguing with these fluoride people, and they're just so arrogant, and they think that they're better than you because they know something that's a lie and believe it to be true. And I said, you know what my problem is? I can think.
That's right.
My problem.
That's right.
If I couldn't think,
and they said, well, we can fix that. We've got fluoride.
Hey,
and then you won't be able to think. Your IQ will drop. Your fertility will drop. So the children you might have had won't be born, but those that are born will have genetic damage from the fluoride. And we've got something special for you. We're going to inject you with vaccines that contain aluminum. Now, aluminum is synergistically, that is super additively, 2 + 2 = a whole lot more than 4, toxic with fluoride. So either toxic aluminum or toxic fluoride become about 1,000 times more toxic than that level would be if it hadn't been mixed with the other one. So you drink the water, you take the vaccines, and in many cities in the United States, virtually all, consumers have been taught to believe that they want sparkly water, not sparkling as with gas, but shiny, glittery water. And so I kid you not, Vinny, They add aluminum hydroxide to the water so that they have both aluminum and fluoride and just some nummy chlorine thrown in for good measure.
On top of that, there's been some water testing done in the United States and New Zealand that have recently found traces of uranium. So that must make the water a lot more shiny.
Arsenic, nummy, nummy, nummy.
Mm. Oh,
and
yeah.
The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, they're your friends and mine, just like the Fraud and Death Administration. How could they be anything other than our friends? They recently increased the arsenic level, which causes cancer and autoimmune disease and all kinds of neurological and endocrine problems, nummy-num. They recently increased the allowed arsenic levels so that their buddies over at the Fraud and Death Administration here in the United States, or there in the United States, I'm in Chile actually, could raise the limits on arsenic in poultry feed because although the FDA has denied and the United States Department of Agriculture, that's the useless Department of Agriculture, USDA, although they have denied that arsenic was ever added to chicken feed and turkey feed and so on. Now they say, well, okay, we've been allowing it sort of under the table or under the chicken coop for decades. Why do they put arsenic in chicken feed, Vinny? Why did the chicken cross the arsenic-laced road? Ask me.
Why?
I knew you couldn't resist asking me, Vinny. I'll tell you. Because arsenic causes swelling. Swelling means retention of water. That means the birds come to market weight 2 to 3 days sooner than if they didn't have swollen cells. And so Tyson and the other producers of massive chicken bodies make more money, and you get to eat more arsenic. Yes!
You know what's really funny about this is I just cut together...
I can't think of anything really funny.
Well, not so much funny as an interesting coincidence. Professor Paul Connett did a presentation here in New Zealand in February about fluoride, and I just edited that and put it up online. It says, The Truth About Fluoride, Paul Connett, February 2013, for those who want to go and watch the video. It's the best cutting I've ever done in my life, two camera angles, the whole HD, the whole nine yards. And what was funny, considering what you just mentioned, is that he said, the proponents of fluoride said that, we're just adjusting the natural levels of a naturally occurring substance. And he says, well, arsenic is naturally occurring. Who else wants to adjust the natural levels of arsenic? Apparently, chicken farmers.
The FDA. Yes. Well, that's interesting. Let's talk about adjusting the natural levels of something or other. If you think about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the Middle East, where, like Iraq, for example, where depleted uranium has been adjusted into the environment. The only thing that happened was that almost everything that got adjusted into the environment, a gorgeous concept that I'm just exploring with you now, Vinny, almost everything that got adjusted into the environment, all that uranium and strontium 90 and cobalt 60 and all that radioactive good stuff like iodine 131 and 134, it's all naturally occurring, so it must be okay. And the fact that those people got sick and died from it, like the people at Chernobyl who got sick and died from what was released, that means, according to the Japanese radiation health expert, that they were sad. Not after they got sick, but before they got sick, because he has publicly announced that radiation only makes people sick if they're not smiling. Now, as a physician, I can tell you that after death, there is something that is called rhizor, which is the smile of death. The tissues draw back and you get this. It's a smile. Good smile, right? It's called rhizor. It is the smile of death. Now, it is true, I think he's right, that only people who are smiling in that rhizor grimace would not be affected by radiation. So I think the man has given us some important information. Dead and happy means safe from radiation, which is primarily naturally occurring. Not all of it. There's cesium-137, there's plutonium, and there's all the transuranium elements that are only created in nuclear piles. But cesium-137, for instance, only exists in nuclear blasts and nuclear chambers. So we can measure how much radiation is produced by, let's say, Fukushima Daiichi by measuring the cesium-137. But aside from those pesky little exceptions, well, shoot, it's all natural, so it must be okay.
Yeah. Plutonium's a naturally occurring substance, isn't it?
Named Pluto after the god of the underworld. It's not a naturally occurring substance.
Is it not?
No. The first plutonium molecules in the world were created in a nuclear reactor. Now, The interesting thing is if plutonium were natural, there would be no life on Earth because one molecule of plutonium is lethal, will give you a 100% chance of cancer of the stomach, of the lungs, of the brain. Not, you know, the location depends on where it lodges. But if plutonium, in fact, occurred in nature, nature wouldn't occur. Rocks would occur. Rain, water, mud, but nothing with life.
Okay. So that's not a good one then. I do feel that this is something very important because the entirety of the environment is being toxified. In my opinion, deliberately, because the people who are toxifying it don't like human beings.
I'm not sure. I've heard several things, Vinny. I've heard, and you have to remember that they're not calling me up and telling me what their plans and their agenda is. So we're speculating here. But what I can see from what I've read, I just lost your bit. There you are again, you handsome devil. Look at you in a tie and a dress shirt, probably a jacket. Are you hiding again because you just disappeared? Okay.
No, I don't know what's going on here with my video feed. There's a little bit of thing. I'll have to reset during the break, which is coming up in about 45 seconds. So if you want to quickly finish what you're saying.
What was I saying, Vinny?
I don't know. Something about me being handsome.
Yes. Famulous. Absolutely famulous. Whatever it was that I was saying, I'm sure I'll remember it after the break.
Well, we were talking about the agenda of the scumbaggery and how we're kind of speculating what their intentions are. I was speculating
there are two schools of thought. One says they hate everybody and they want to just kill all humans on the planet. I think that's ridiculous. The other says that they only need 10% of the total population and they want to kill everybody else on the planet. And that's what I believe.
Yeah. I think there's a eugenics plot, and eugenics, basically, these people interbreed and intermarry with each other and everything like that. They don't need a massive wide gene pool, according to them, because, hey, if you keep it elite, if you keep it sections off, hey, then we'll create superhumans, as opposed to retarded people who are completely disabled, as is the lesson of history. We'll be right back with Dr. Rima Labo.
Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually, will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is the what was it, the Famulus?
Famulus. I'm putting Famulus. That in my bio.
Yeah.
Vinnie Eastwood as Famulus.
Yeah, yeah. You can add that to your list of Labo's labels that that are so famous. Yeah, yeah. Now, we've been talking about fluoride, we're talking about radiation, and I was wondering as well, we're talking about the mentality, all right? And one of the mentalities that has been really irking me recently is the mentality of a psychopath. Those who have no empathy, who crave power and control, those who lie constantly, who have no honor, no truth, no love. They just don't fit in, I don't think.
Oh, elite. The elite. Yeah. And, of course, my former husband. I learned about the deep reality of what it means to interact with a psychopath because I had no suspicion that I was interacting with a psychopath, which is the key. You see, a psychopath, and by the way, your listeners may or may not know that I am a psychiatrist. I have never written a prescription for a drug. I am a drug-free psychiatrist, but I am a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. So I speak with some degree of knowledge and a lot of experience in this. When you meet a psychopath, the better the psychopath is, the less you will ever suspect that you're dealing with a psychopath. It is a hidden affliction because the psychopath knows that to get what they want, they give you a mirror. You never see them. They create what they understand that you need, want, or can handle. And so they create a false person for you. And if they're a really good psychopath, then that false person is totally convincing. Now, the elite, the powers that think they be, create psychopaths in themselves and their children, because when we nurture our young, when we humans nurture our young, we offer them something very important. We offer them a trellis around which they can twine their emerging selves, their own personal inner life, their inner reality. If that trellis is solid and healthy, then the chances of the child learning to be a solidly healthy person with a true self of true sense of self and a true capacity for empathy and relatedness and affection and love, that capacity is increased greatly. If, on the other hand, the person offering that nurturing scaffolding is damaged and deficient, then the child will have a very hard time not incorporating those damages and those deficiencies. And we see this all the time. You can think of all the people you know, some of whom have struggled mightily to overcome the damage of their early life, and some of whom may have struggled or may not, but replicate the damage of their early life in one way or another and are known as sick puppies. So when we see a psychopath who has been raised by a psychopath, and remember, we're talking about transgenerational, sick, monstrous puppies here, and we're talking about intentional child abuse and satanic ritual in some cases to intentionally kill the ability to feel empathy with other human beings. This is a real thing. Not everyone is exposed to it, but many of the elite are, and there is no denying it. This is very, very real, and it has cataclysmic consequences. I believe, for example, that someone like George Bush Sr. is either a genuine self-constructed psychopath, or he had some help as a young person.
His father, Prescott Bush, was done under the Trading with the Enemy Act during World War II for shipping around about one-third, give or take, of the raw resources needed for the Nazi Correct. War effort.
Correct.
I don't think he was entirely self-constructed.
Probably not. Probably not. George W. Bush was the only American president who, if he could understand the concept, would be able to say with accuracy that both of his grandfathers were unindicted war criminals. I think that's special, don't you? Famulous, oh. I would say. Special. Mm. So the destruction wrought by a guy like Cheney or a guy like George Bush Sr. or the father of George Bush and Walker, all of them, the complete willingness, John D. Rockefeller, who financed the Russian Revolution. I'm sure you know that story.
I don't know specifically about that. But,
this is so cool. John D. Rockefeller, who, by the way, was the son of an itinerant herbalist and homeopath, and whose father sold snake oil which actually has a lot of omega-3 fatty acids and a lot of biological benefits. But his father sold snake oil and homeopathy and herbs and so on. And John D. Rockefeller struck out on his own, Jr., and struck out on his own and became an enterprising young businessman who was beyond ruthless, beyond ruthless. And the Rothschild family had their agents in the United States. They have their agents everywhere. And they said, we like his style, you know, a little training and a little backing. Man, this guy could go far. He's our kind of psychopath. Yeah. And so they bankrolled him. And they helped him to destroy everybody who was any kind of competitor in the emerging petroleum business, so that ultimately John D. Rockefeller owned the world's entire supply of petroleum. He realized he didn't have to own it. He just had to own the control of it. And you know the story of how John D. Rockefeller destroyed natural, or attempted to destroy natural medicine, do you not?
That would be the Flexner Report, where they sent this guy named Flexner around to all the medical schools in the United States. They had a lot of them at the time, and he was ordered to rank all of these medical schools as being very good or not very good. And so naturally, he I believe he ranked all of the medical drug-based schools as very good, and everything to do with naturopathy, homeopathy, or any other of these various eclectic practices rated them as not very good, and got a lot of them shut down, so that the Rockefeller Foundation would in turn have a control over the medical industry and force it towards drugs and poison.
Goes a little deeper. You're absolutely correct. Abram Flexner was commissioned by John D. Rockefeller and his friend Andrew Carnegie, another psychopath. Now, Andrew Carnegie came up a poor boy through the School of Hard Knocks, and along the way, as he clawed his way up the ladder of success, he said, screw everybody else. What counts is what I get. And so he developed, he was a sort of self-generated psychopath. And he did very, very well, by the way. Carnegie Mellon University, to the contrary, notwithstanding, it is a bastion of industrial science for the purposes that you might imagine. Anyway, Rockefeller became concerned. Remember, this is the man who owns the entire, or controls the entire output of petroleum in the world, 99%.
He did that by buying out barrel makers and barrel suppliers, so that the competitors couldn't actually ship or barrel their oil for sale.
That was one of his techniques. He also lowered prices where there were competitors below the cost of manufacture to drive them into bankruptcy, and then he would take their companies and then raise the price very high again. So he used his widespread network of sales and marketing to create local conditions that were totally intolerable to local businesses. A true robber baron of the first water. So he became concerned, hey, I got all this petroleum flowing all over the world, but I don't believe that the internal combustion engine will ever consume all of this output. He made a mistake. Powerful people make a lot of mistakes. He made a mistake. He said the internal combustion engine isn't going to really have that big a future. So what am I going to do with all this oil? Well, in those days, back before the turn of the 20th century, almost every drug was derived from the goo, the gunk, the coal tar at the bottom of a petroleum cracking tower. When they were refining the petroleum, they drew off the stuff they wanted, and what was left at the bottom was this horrible, gunky mess of hydrocarbons. Uncharacterized, nobody knew exactly what was in it, but it was just, you know, debris. Petroleum debris. And they took that and they would process it, and using organic chemistry tricks and tools, they would turn it into various drugs, all of which were pretty toxic, you can imagine. They were called coal tar derivatives. Well, he owned all that coal tar. What the hell was he going to do with it? So he was told by his agents in Germany, where the organic chemistry revolution was at its peak, that they had all these pharmaceutical houses and they were using the coal tar derivatives, and maybe there was a market. So he sent his guys to Europe, specifically Germany, but also Switzerland and a little bit in France, like Ron Poulenc, and he bought up controlling interest, not the whole company, just the controlling interest in the company, in all of the pharmaceutical companies that mattered in Europe. Then he had to do something with their toxic brews. So he decided that he would destroy, this was an intentional thought, he would destroy anything that didn't use pharmaceuticals and was called healthcare. So he founded the Rockefeller Institute, whose first head was named Ephraim Flexner, the brother of Abram Flexner. And if you read the initiating documents of the Rockefeller Institute, as I have, you will see that it is entirely devoted to promulgating, promoting, and protecting pharmaceuticals, which happens to be what Article 6 of the enabling legislation of the United States Fraud and Death Administration says. The same words, what a coincidence, to promote, promulgate, and protect the pharmaceutical industry. That's why it exists. And Rockefeller was a huge proponent of creating the compliant lapdog FDA. So Rockefeller sent Flexner around, and Flexner not only raided the medical schools, he said there are two types of medicine. There's real medicine, that's allopathic or drug-based medicine, and then there's everything else. Now, everything else had licensed practitioners. There were licensed homeopaths, osteopaths, chiropractors, herbalists, what have you. And Rockefeller gave $1 million to each of the states in the United States. And back then, you know, $1 million was almost real money. And he gave $1 million to the land-grant college of each of the states to set up an allopathic medical school. And he gave an extra, the $1 million to each state was to set up a medical board to criminalize everything except allopathic medicine. And then he gave an extra $1 million to Harvard and to Yale to set up the elite medical schools. And then he spent a lot of money bringing the American Medical Association, which had absolutely no legs, so to speak. Nobody paid any attention to allopathic medicine, and they basically couldn't even pay their rent. But we have a letter from Flexner saying to them before he went out to do the Flexner Report, don't you worry about a thing. The fix is in. At the end of this process, the American Medical Association will emerge as the only medical system for allopathic medicine, as the only medical system left. And by God, that's what they did. So he set out to destroy homeopathy and naturopathy and osteopathy and chiropractic and blah, 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 blah. However, like the monarchs of England, the only medicine that John D. Rockefeller ever used until he died at 94 was homeopathy. Hmm. How about them apples? How about them homeopathic, sugar-coated, meaningless, useless little apples, huh?
Yeah. See, I always thought that a homeopath was like some kind of gangster who was a psychopath, you know. He's my homie.
Well, yeah, but he's like a homeboy psychopath. Yeah. That's why he's called a homeopath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's talking about.
He's a homie.
What's up, homeopath?
Yeah, what's up, homeopath? Hey, give me some of them little sugar pills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I always found that very funny is that, you know, you give somebody a sugar pill and they're 30% likely to actually get over whatever disorder that they've got going there, and the rate of success of allopathic medicine is roughly also 30%.
We'll when you're lucky and it doesn't break. Kill you. When you're lucky
right.
And it doesn't kill you.
Yeah, that's the other 70%. We'll be right back after the break with Dr. Rima Lebo.
I got some so-called friends. Right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. You can also now listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show in Auckland. For the first time, we have a transmitter in Te Atatū South. You can hear it as far Sandringham and maybe West Auckland as well. That's 88 FM in Auckland, 83.7 in Hamilton and Tauranga. Just go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com for the archives. And just bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you are capable of going to my homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make news. You can donate or subscribe for a couple of dollars a month, and that basically just provides me with residual income so I can just, you know, pay the bills and so on and so forth and continue to give coverage to very important issues that the mainstream media just will not touch. And I'm the only person in New Zealand doing this. So if you support New Zealand, if you support America, if you support activism or information in general, this is the place to be. This is the show to support. Do it. Do it now. Otherwise, we may not have terribly much of a future without any decent information to go on. My very special guest is Dr. Rima Labo, and this show is also much like the bathtub, doesn't work without a plug. So, Rima, if you could plug your web, I'm obliged. Dr. Rima, are you there? We seem to have lost her. She's a bit frozen. So, oh, wait.
I'm here.
Gotcha.
I'm here now.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah. You might want to just reset your webcam, though. Just turn it off and on, and that should be fine.
Reset my webcam. Okay. My webcam is built in, and I was having a lot of trouble getting it to start. Do you really want me to do that?
Oh, no, no. It's just like the Skype thing. You know, there's a little... Oh, well, oh, no, here we go. You're back.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. I can turn it off, and I can turn it on. I am so powerful.
Oh, yeah. Like God. Speaking of the most powerful, we were arguing over the leading cause of death. And it's like in this magazine here, it says attack of the medical system. The U.S. medical system is now officially the second leading cause of death. But the problem is it's actually the number one leading cause of death. You know, it's like Spartacus. I'm the leading cause of death. No, I'm the leading cause of death.
Well, I want to make something very clear. In this leading cause of death, whether you or the other guy in the medical system is the leading cause of death, it is those cases which were counted that use prescription drugs properly. These are not medical errors being counted. These are not somebody leaving a sponge in a surgical wound being counted. The figures that you're referring to are for properly used medications. Now, we can debate, are properly used medications the second leading cause of death, or are they the leading cause of death? But either way, it's pretty horrendous, and people are buying these prescriptions, and they're putting this crap in their bodies and their children's bodies, and they're taking vaccines, and they're not saying no. What is wrong with this picture? Fluoride is what's wrong with this picture. Fluoride, if you remember, not only makes your teeth weak and mottled and makes your bones weak and breakable and gives you cancer and diabetes and lowers your IQ and makes you infertile, fluoride also makes you tractable, makes you biddable, makes you passive, makes you say, yeah, well, like, whatever. So it's not good for your grammar either.
Which is incidentally why fluoride is used as a binding agent in the vast majority of antidepressants and psychotropic drugs.
And in some of them is actually 50% by weight of the actual medicine, if you can call it a medicine, of the actual toxin, 50% by weight.
Aye.
Now, we've talked about the fact, I believe, that fluoride fluoride's one of fluoride's physical effects, in addition to bones and teeth and the other things we talked about, is to cause the pineal gland to calcify. Many people believe that the pineal gland, in addition to putting out melatonin, which regulates sleep cycles and also keeps you from getting cancer, many people believe that the pineal gland is your radio receiver for the wider access, for the divine, for the universe, for God, for your moral compass, for whatever you want to call it. And so if you want to control people and enslave them, a very good way to do it is take away any access to a higher awareness that there's anything outside themselves and what you're teaching them and demanding that they do. Watch television, go to work, don't ask questions, behave like an autistic person.
Reminds me of those anti-drug eggs, you know, like, this is your brain. Isn't it got like an egg? This is your brain on heroin, and they smash it with a frying pan. Just thinking, you know, you could just switch out heroin with fluoride, and it's the same thing, isn't it?
This is your brain on drugs. Any drug. Take your pick. Your pick. And why don't you give it to your kids while you're at it? And why don't you inject them while you're at it? And why don't you poison their little bodies until their little brains and their little detox systems are overwhelmed? And then I've got an idea, Vinny. Why don't you give them drugs?
You know, this is part of the thing that the pro-fluoride people are always on about, that people like us are really angry and upset, and we insult them and we attack them and so forth. I think it's perfectly justified, okay? You're killing children. You're promoting cancer. You're destroying the level of people's intelligence. And we're not allowed to be upset about it. Well, of course, you can't get upset about it because you're dosed on fluoride. Yes,
if you were upset about it, the radiation could kill you. So the fluoride is really helping you.
Yeah, I forgot. You forgot. Can't die.
You silly.
You can't have negative effects if you're already dead. Yeah,
I think. No, or if you're smiling.
If we just have a big grin. So that would mean that psychopathic leaders of countries and CEOs of corporations must never get affected by a fake smile.
Ted Kennedy never got brain cancer, right?
This is not a coincidence. That's the evidence. It's all there. It's in frickin' stone.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think with that kind of logical capacity, you have a great career ahead of you as a vaccine scientist. You can make up facts, make correlations, bring them together that make absolutely no sense, use multisyllabic words, and you're a scientist, and you're pushing vaccines, and they'll give you stock in the company. And then you can sit on the regulatory panel that approves the thing that you own stock in. Yes!
While you're being different pharmaceutical companies at the same time.
Yes, yes, yes. And you could change your name to Paul Offit, which rhymes with profit.
Yeah. And then go play for the Beatles. what was it we were talking about the other day? Damn! It's gone out of my head. But it was something along the lines.
Too much fluoride.
We do actually have fluoride in our water, and we can't really afford to cook everything in it. So we're still cooking food in it.
Cooking doesn't get rid of it.
Yeah. I know that, and it really F's me off, quite frankly. And this is the point that people don't freaking get. Okay, people don't want it. And if they don't want it, anyway, you'll force medicating people. It's just that simple. People don't get that. It's not a medication. Really? What's the definition of a medication? Oh, a substance that's given to treat a disease, like dental decay? Yeah, but that's not a medicine, really. So you're saying that even though the promoters of fluoride admit that its effect is only topical, if that means... effect whatsoever. Have you ever put sunscreen on your skin? That's the incorrect application method. You're supposed to actually drink it. Drink that sunscreen. Squirt it into your mouth. Just swallow it. It's going to be good for you. Yeah, that's the fluoride mentality. Clear the fluoride in the head. Oh, yes. And we're having all these nice places where we get all this stuff from. It was real funny. Our minister said, oh, the fluoride doesn't come from the phosphate fertilizer industry. It just comes from places where they crush rocks. Really? How does the phosphate fertilizer industry get all their phosphate fertilizer? By crushing rocks. You can't make this stuff up, man. It's unbelievable. Sean Plunkett, who's a punk, you know, I mean, I think they misspelled his name on the radio thing. Just total scum. You know what I'm talking about when you talk about radio show host scum, those kind of egotistical, psychopathic, scumbaggery individuals who appeal to authority and speak nothing but logical fallacy all day long on the radio. Those kind of people interviews Mary Byrne from. Interrupts her every couple of seconds, has nothing decent to say, only spouting propaganda and saying that everything that you're saying, Mary, and all of your facts and figures and stuff like that that's actually based up by scientific evidence doesn't count because I'm a douchebag and I don't agree with it. That's why. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break. I just got a little bit angry. I think they'll be able to demonize as a result of this little break. We'll be right back after the break with the famulous Dr. Rima Labo.
Particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima-irradiated island-chained nation of New Zealand, where it's so bright down here that everybody has an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest is Dr. Rima Labo, and we were talking about fluoride, psychopaths, radiation, so on and so forth, and indeed the way the medical industry was structured in order to basically perpetrate purposely scumbaggery all across the world. And nutrition, I think, ties into this very importantly, mostly because they don't teach doctors nutrition anymore.
Well, I don't think anymore is a fair word, Vinny. They never taught doctors nutrition. Doctors who are part of the allopathic medical system that we were talking about were never supposed to learn nutrition because nutrition can cure you. And you don't want that. That's not good for business. I mean, really, how disloyal could you be? Giving people vitamins and minerals and nutrients, they might get well. They might not take drugs. They might not need more drugs. In fact, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, CHOP, CHOP as it is called, where Dr. Paul Offit, which rhymes with profit, a man who, according to Joe Mercola, received $48 million or so last year for his vaccine whoring, Dr. Paul Offit has convinced the hospital to, are you ready for this? Forbid parents whose children are treated at CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, to take any vitamins, any minerals, any enzymes, any herbs, any nutrients, because it will interfere, I kid you not, it will interfere with the effects of the medication. And yes, it might. They might not have side effects. They might not get sick from the medicine, or at least not as sick. Oh, dear. Because Dr. Offit wrote a book, bless his pointed little head, called Do You Believe in Magic? About what he calls alternative medicine. I call it advanced medicine because, to me, the only alternative medicine that I know of is allopathic drug-based medicine, which is the poor alternative to pretty much everything. But be that as it may, it was only one of many mistakes. He wrote this book called Do You Believe in Magic? And he does. He believes that there is no such thing as biochemistry. That's magic, because all nutrition is applied biochemistry. So shazam, he made biochemistry go away. He also doesn't believe in science. He believes in magic. He believes in the assertion principle. I say it, it becomes true. So he says that are you ready for this? Do you have your intellectual seatbelt on? Are you ready for me? All righty. He says that there has never been a case in which a vitamin, a mineral, a nutrient, an enzyme, an herb has been shown to be helpful. He even said that we, the people who believe in this magic, think that we can cure cancer when everybody knows that nobody can cure cancer.
I was talking to my friend the other day. He went up and accosted some people for the Cancer Society. We have this thing in New Zealand called Daffodil Day, where you buy a daffodil and they give the money to the Cancer Society, right? And he was kind of like unsure. It was the first time ever accosting somebody. World Order agenda. So what happened was, and I thought he should have asked this question. So how long has the Cancer Research Institute been around there? How long has the Cancer Society been around? Oh, it's been around for 20, 30 years. Okay. How many cures for cancer have they come up with? Okay. Well, so if I walked up to you and I asked you what you did for a living, you said, I'm a builder. For 30 years. Okay. How many things have you built? Nothing. You're not a builder then, are you?
Well, you know, let's be fair, Vinny. Let's be fair. They actually, in the builder analogy, what they would have to say is, well, I started a lot of buildings, but as soon as I got the foundation and part of the floor laid, I took a wrecking ball and destroyed them because my company only gets paid if I don't succeed in building anything, because the Cancer Society, like the American Cancer Society, and check the foundational documents, has to disband if a cure for cancer is found. Oops. Yeah. Oops.
Is that why when Rick Simpson found that he could cure cancer with high-quality hemp oil?
Yep.
That's a society, and said that he'd found a cure, and they said to him, quote, we're not interested in a cure for cancer.
Yes, that's why. Because we like our nice, cushy jobs and our travel and our TV appearances and our daffodils. God knows we like our daffodils. And so instead of having to work for a living, we work for the Cancer Society, which is never, ever, ever going to find a cure.
Yeah. Well, I think the basic principle is you actually have to produce something if you want to be of use to society. They don't produce anything. They do produce a lot of cancer, though.
Really? I'm sorry. I have to disagree with you. They produce massive income, more than you and I ever will in any lifetime that we can imagine living. They produce billions and trillions of dollars globally by killing people very profitably. So you're wrong. They do produce something. They produce profit rhymes with off it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, profit in and of itself is nothing. You've actually got to come up with some kind of a product, something stable, something that's actually useful to humanity.
Oh, useful
and
to humanity.
Evil giant corporations or organizations that are acting at the behest of the globalist, I don't think qualifies as a productive member of society. If anything, they are the direct opposite, a destructive member of society. Are they even members of society? Because they don't have any comeuppance, do they? Normal members of law, or if you kill somebody or something of that nature, you go to jail, you get prosecuted, so on and so forth. What happens to these guys if they kill whole bunches of people with cancer and so on and so forth? They get promoted. They get a Nobel Peace Prize or something like that. Speaking of Nobel Prizes, did you hear that Monsanto for short, is a Nobel Prize for agriculture? That's like giving a Nobel Peace Prize to Genghis Khan.
It's the World Food Prize. It's similar to the Nobel Prize. It's not actually given out by the Nobel Committee in Stockholm. It's given out by another bunch of idiots. And these are corporate-sponsored idiots, like, unfortunately, the Nobel Peace Prize has begun to behave as if it were. Yes, I have heard that. Yesterday, I took part in the anti-Monsanto march in Santiago de Chile, where I live. It was marvelous. We had T-shirts on that said in Spanish, the equivalent of "Seeds are life." Seeds are not for sale, or life is not for sale. And then we had our Facebook page, our Spanish one, which is Natural Solutions Chile. And there was music, and there was dancing. There was a wonderful, wonderful troupe of native Chilean dancers dancing the entire march, several miles, very vigorously in their costumes. It was wonderful. And on the other hand, the opposite choice is the food of death. I mean, how do you choose? It's so difficult.
Food of death. I do feel that this is actually part of the mechanism by which people are being toxified and killed and so on and
Absolutely.
So forth. It's like food is life, water is life, air is life, therefore they're destroying all three to make sure that life becomes very difficult.
Exactly. If you go to our website, Dr. Rima Truth Report, that's DrRima TruthReport.com, you will see the five doors. We have identified five genomicidal technologies, the five principal ways that these psychopathic monsters are using to reduce the population. And they are chemtrails and geoengineering. They are, and by the way, at any point, they can decide that what they're spraying out of those planes could be a whole lot more toxic. Right now, we're at soft kill. They could at any point, since the planes are equipped and ready to go and so on, and they have the system all in line, they could make that hard kill, fast kill, anytime they want. So there's geoengineering and chemtrails. There's drugs and vaccines, a biggie. There's food that does not support life. There's GMOs, genetically modified organisms, both food and non-food, incredibly dangerous. And then there's radiation. Think about Fukushima. And can we talk about Fukushima for a minute?
Go for your life.
I would love to. What's the radiation situation where you are, Vinny?
I just assume the worst. Basically, I don't know, but I assume that it's really, 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 really bad.
Well, I think it is, but it's really, 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 really worse in the Northern Hemisphere. And by the way, soon the Natural Solutions Foundation will have an app that you can put onto your phone that will give you the radiation reading and a whole lot more. Very interesting. That's in development right now, because we think that information belongs in everybody's hands. So the radiation situation is out of control. I've been saying for basically since it started that it was out of control and that it couldn't be contained, because it's six reactors plus another four. You know, have we talked about this, that there are actually 10 reactors that are in trouble? It's not six reactors. I know just this much Japanese, just a smidgen. And I know that Daini means number one. So they were calling it Fukushima Daiichi. I'm sorry, that means number one. Ichi means one. So they were calling it Fukushima Daiichi, Fukushima Daiichi, Fukushima Daiichi. And I said, that's odd. We don't call it Hanford number one or Indian Point number one. We call it Hanford or Indian Point when we have a nuclear reactor. I wonder why they're calling it Fukushima number one. So I went scraping around on the internet, and I discovered that there is also a Fukushima Daini, which means number two. It's directly next door, cheek by jowl. And so Fukushima Daiichi has six reactors. Fukushima Daini has four reactors, several of which were damaged. Now, I'm an environmental physician as well as a drug-free psychiatrist, and so I know a good deal about radiation. And I said, big problem. There will never again be clean food or water or air in the Northern Hemisphere unless somebody finds a way to contain it. And so I talked to world-famous nuclear engineers like Arne Gunderson of Fairwinds, and I talked to radiation risk hazard people like Chris Busby of the European Nuclear Radiation Commission, or Risk Assessment Commission, and I spoke to a number of other people, and they confirmed what my knowledge told me, which was that there was absolutely no way to ever contain or stop Fukushima Daiichi, the gift that keeps on giving, or Fukushima Daini, the secret gift that also keeps on giving. And I said, that's the wrong answer. So the trustees of the Natural Solutions Foundation decided that we would incorporate, as part of our self-generated mission, we would incorporate the search for technologies that could be used credibly, reliably, and could be iterated to be large enough to actually be applied in the real world. And we have located several technologies that have very powerful science behind them, very powerful science, that have just simply not been exploited. Why not, you may ask? Well, because nobody wants them exploited in the same way that nobody wants a cure for cancer who's at the Cancer Society level and above, as we were just talking about. So together with Ambassador Murata, who has been calling for a world response to Fukushima, and he might just as well be pissing in the wind, and with Dr. Busby from Europe, we have created an international commission called ICSAFER for the permanent remediation of the nuclear hazard. And of course, once that nuclear hazard can be remediated, then every nuclear hazard can be remediated, because there's nothing fundamentally different about the cesium-137 at Fukushima and the cesium-137 at San Onofre or whatever nuclear reactors are around. And so that's a project that we're working on right now through the Natural Solutions Foundation. I dare say, from the response that we're getting from people around the world, that we're the only people who thought of it. To which my response is, so what do you brush your teeth with? Duh!
One of the most important... It's one of the most important issues concerning the world today, this Fukushima crisis. And you look at the satellite imagery of the radiation plumes that, like, they're still dumping hundreds of millions or whatever of liters of highly irradiated water into the Pacific. Okay, we've got all this really...
Can
we get rid of it? Oh, I know. We'll contaminate the world's largest ocean. Brilliant move there.
But wait. Before we do that, how about we have containment vessels that have radioactive core, which is called corium. Isn't that cute? C-O-R-I-U-M. Corium. Oh, how sweet. So the corium is out of control. The nuclear reaction is continuing, and it's burned down through the bottom of the containment building. And where did it go? Well, it went into one of the world's largest aquifers, which just happens to supply Tokyo.
You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. As somebody who was deep on the inside once said, however bad you think it is, it's 10 times worse. So it's actually 100 times worse. And then a decade later, he says it's probably about 10,000 times worse than you could ever possibly believe. Dr. Rima Labo is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinegarshow.com. Wait, hold on a second. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 5 till 7 Central, 3 till 5 Pacific, 6 till 8 Eastern, 11 till 1 o'clock in the morning in the UK, the Uber King, and 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. for the duration of October, and it'll be kicked back as soon as the US goes into their daylight savings time. Through to midday till 2 p.m., where you can listen in live. For those of you listening to the archives on our affiliates across New Zealand, thank you very much for doing so. You need to support those local networks to get the word out. Ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to media, most of them are bought and paid for. It's just that simple. So if you don't like that, then you must support the media you do approve of. It's like buying money, spending money at McDonald's supports McDonald's. Listening to scumbags stream media is giving them ratings, is giving them money. Switch them off. Turn on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Go to DrRemaTruthReport.com. And the various other websites, you can just search Dr. Rima Labo on Google, and there's plenty of results, a lot of research to be done there. And I was contacted by a 17-year-old girl who's just waking last night, and she asked me, "Oh, do you believe that there's a evil criminal cabal going on?" And I say, "Just Google Vinnie Eastwood. I think you'll find out the answer to that question." And she was struggling with the fact that it was very, very difficult going through this awakening, even at the tender age of 17, to find out that almost everything that you've been brought up to believe was in fact friend of mine. Or rather, a friend of Sarah's, my missus, she is starting to wake up as well. Her name's Moni, and she's starting to watch documentaries. And you know that as soon as you stop watching television and start watching documentaries, that you're really on a good path to waking up. I mean, my first 6 months when I was really kind of my fake life, essentially, obsessing with money and so on and so forth, I was watching around about 2 documentaries a day for a good 6 months. I had a geometrically increased knowledge base in a very short period of time. That's also why I encourage people to listen to this show, because there's so much information that we discuss on the show that you want to listen to again and again. Now,
I would like to, if I may, Vinny, I'd like to share something about this waking up process. It's exciting, it's exhilarating, it's painful, and it's very frightening because, as you said, virtually everything that you believe in comes up for questioning and most of it falls apart. And then you have relationships with people who can't hear you, who don't want to hear you. William McKinley was the 25th president of the United States. He was fatally shot, I should say. He was assassinated. And he got one good line in before he was executed for messing around with the central banks, like every other president who's been assassinated. He said, "The truth will set you free, but first it's going to make you very unhappy."
That's true. And what I've found about new people waking up is the trauma factor. It is extremely traumatic. I recall in the what I was doing, I was getting into a bit of debt kind of thing, because I'd suffering from employophobia, a fear of being employed. And what happened was, is I started to get aggressive, very aggressive, angry with everything and everybody. And I remember a conversation I was having with my sister Janine about how to consolidate my debt by getting another loan. And I was like, debt, I don't like loans or anything. And I just remember, why is everybody such a freaking slave? You know, and it occurred to me, you know, now this makes you crazy until you learn to get a handle on it and figure out what's really going on. Because part of what figuring the world out is about figuring out yourself at the same time you Absolutely. Deal with it.
Absolutely. It is so difficult to go through a total reorganization of belief system, of understanding of how things are organized. You see the corruption and you feel overwhelmed. Now, people write to me all the time. And they say, my husband, my wife, my father, my brother, my sister, my lover, my friends, my co-workers aren't listening to me. They don't want to hear what I have to say. And the answer is, yep, they don't, because they are afraid to go through the whole thing that you're going through. Look how painful it is for you. A lot of people say, I would rather not know. And you, Vinny, say a very wise thing. At least you, like McKinley, have a good line, one good line. It's a good thing for one person to come up with one good line before they're assassinated. No, we don't want you assassinated. I'm being facetious. You say there are 7 billion people out there. Forget about the ones who can't hear you. Because, you know, eventually they will hear you. They will say, you know, I heard that before, and son of a gun, you're right. I see it now. It takes time. It takes frequency and repetition. Typically, people have to hear something, whether it's true or false, 6 times before they can incorporate it into their own belief system. So you say it, somebody else says it, somebody else says it, and then shazam, it's true, and they thought of it, which is kind of interesting.
And this is not to be confused, ladies and gentlemen, with you repeating yourself 7 times the same thing to one person. Other people have to say it too.
Yes. Now, you were talking about how important it is to support the media that you believe in, the media that tells the truth.
Everything that you believe in, really. There's plenty of good companies out there that have products like coffee, for example. I know an incredible product in terms of coffee there as well. So that's the kind of thing people should be really thinking about. Where do your dollars go? Where are your minutes of attention being spent? Because this all costs you something.
Yes, absolutely. When people are listening for 2 hours to the Vinnie Eastwood Show or the Dr. Rima Truth Reports on Thursday nights from 10 to midnight Eastern Time, and I'll give you the URL for that in a minute. When you're listening to that kind of show, ours and other people's, you are learning, you are encouraging the dissemination of truth, and you are also building a base that gives us the ability to go on. I have to tell you what is real for me about this. If I knew what I know, and like you, I know a whole lot about this stuff, and it's everywhere. It's the octopus. It touches every phase of life. If I couldn't take action against it and help to derail the globalist agenda, I could not tolerate the despair. So for me, the way that I have hope is by being effective. For example, here in Chile, the Monsanto law, as they call it, which is the intellectual property rights law for the next iteration of taking rights away from people, is called UPAV 91. It's an international treaty. It can never be rescinded once passed. UPAV 91 takes away seed-saving rights and basically gives the multinational corporations and countries that want to the opportunity to destroy small farmers and to control every bit of food. And of course, if I control the world's food supply, I get to decide who lives and who dies. You don't want Monsanto and the U.S. government in that position, but UPAV 91 puts them there. So Chile was going to vote on UPAV 91, and they had four senators against, and they had 27 senators in favor. I testified before the Agricultural Committee in Chile. I don't speak Spanish, but I prepared my slides in Spanish. And they were going to vote. That was on maybe a Friday. They were going to vote the next Tuesday. And it was a shoo-in. It was a done deal. I said, oh, no, it's not. And we got active sending out requests on Facebook, which belongs to the CIA, and so on and so on, but using all the social media we could for people to send emails to the senators and the governors and the Minister of Agriculture and so on. And we sent so many emails over the weekend that they postponed the vote. That was way back in, what would it be? Probably May. And we've been fighting them. Now we have 2.5 million emails. And they said, we'll wait until after the elections, which are in November. But now we have 22 senators on our side who have declared their support for not adopting UPAV 91. And it's even better than that. Never before in Chilean political history have senators felt the need to declare their position before a vote. Usually they vote, and then their vote is announced. This is the first time we changed the political process here in Chile. How did we do it? We used social media. We made it go viral. Now, think about the power of that. Think about the power of that. And we have done it on many issues. And sometimes we don't win, but the point is, that's the kind of power that we have, and it comes from the broadcast that you're doing, Vinny. It comes from the website that you're putting up. It comes from what we do at the Natural Solutions Foundation, Dr. Rima TruthReports.com. Our radio show, by the way, is available on Revolution Radio at www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Thursday, 10 to midnight Eastern time, but we're also available on the archive. That's what makes the change. It's dissemination. It's spreading. It's listening. It's not listening to the junk on television when you could watch a documentary instead. That is our power. And then we talk about it. And then we forward it. And then we forward the links to the action item. By God, we have all of the power. These other people are scared scumbags. Pity them.
And also, I wanted to iterate that making a difference is so easy that it's not even funny. Okay, you know, we've talked about this, the various genocidal agendas that are happening, coinciding with each other and so on and so forth. Well, the fact of the matter is you can actually do something or like me, I go down to the organic shop and I buy water that's come out of a valley borehole that's like 800 feet down and has a high pH level, natural water. Start drinking that. If you've got fluoride in your toothpaste, get rid of that. If you've got mainstream media on the brain and so on and so forth, turn it off. If you're eating crapola manufactured by massive American, they instead sell you soft-kill bioweapons, stop eating it, you know? You can have a massive effect just by taking care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Alone.
And other people will say, hey, what's happened to you? Your skin is better. You have more energy. You used to have headaches all the time. You don't anymore. What's going on? And you then you can tell them, I would like to share a vignette, not a Vincent, but a vignette about how much impact we can have, how quickly, if I may. Eleanor Bye was murdered 35 years ago by the National Health Service in the UK. The story is absolutely horrendous. She was secretly enrolled into a medical clinical trial for an experimental drug, Epilin, for a disease she did not have, epilepsy, and it killed her. But rather than leave it at that, she was brought to the hospital dead on arrival, her mother riding in the ambulance. And of course, all this time, her parents had been desperately trying to seek help for her and being stonewalled in the most callous and horrible way. She was brought to the hospital in the ambulance, her mother riding with her. And she was clearly dead when she arrived. But the doctors told Mr. and Mrs. Bye that she was alive but too sick for them to see for 3 days in the intensive care unit. And they demanded that the parents sign informed consent to do first a liver biopsy and a brain biopsy and a heart biopsy and a this biopsy and a that biopsy. And when they tried to refuse, they were threatened and browbeaten, so they signed for the biopsies. At the funeral, and I'll tell you the story when we come back.
We only have about 15 seconds left.
Okay.
Yeah, we will. You know what they call an accident when they're trying to take a biopsy? A bi-oopsie. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Dr. Rima Labo is my very special guest, and we wanted you to quickly finish your story with that.
The family, by the way, is named the Bye, B-Y-E family, and you can go online and look up Eleanor, H-E-L-E-N-O-R, Eleanor Bye, B-Y-E, and you'll find the video and the article about this. So, Mr. Bye was reaching down into the casket to kiss his beloved 12-year-old daughter goodbye, and he felt something at the back of her head. He felt clips, and he lifted her up, and he looked, and he saw that there was a surgical incision that had been sealed with metal staples, and he looked at her abdomen, and he found that as well, and she weighed practically nothing. Why? Because all of the internal organs, including the brain and the liver and so on, which would have been able to be examined at an autopsy, had been removed to disguise the reason for her death. The reason for her death was the illegal use or the illegal enrollment of this child against her parents, without her parents' knowledge, into a drug trial, which the doctor was financially deeply enmeshed with. For 35 years, they tried to get the child's body parts back so they could bury her in a way that was satisfying to them based on their beliefs. And they also tried to get the government to do two things. One, to apologize, because they discovered it was not just their daughter in the National Health Service, but it was thousands of children who had been killed in this and similar ways without parental consent, threatening to take the child away if the parents didn't go along with what they were being forced to do and so on. And they also wanted to impose upon the National Health Service what is called a duty of candor. That means that they have to tell the truth. They have to tell the truth before they do something, or informed consent has no meaning, and they have to tell the truth after something happens so that people can find out what happens, find out whether the adverse event was related to the drug or might be due to an allergy or to a susceptibility or whatever. The National Health Service has no duty of candor imposed upon it. They are permitted to lie to save their own worthless scumbaggery skins at any point to anyone. So the Bis have been trying to get Parliament to adopt the duty of candor. In 2010, the House of Lords considered it and said, well, we think that it would be, and I quote, inconvenient to impose the duty of candor on the National Health Service, and they voted it down. So we published, and the Bis have been desperately trying for 35 years to get somebody to tell their story. So we did a 1 hour, 11 minute video, which is very moving and a very important video. And we wrote an article detailing the situation. We published it first in the UK and then in the United States and worldwide on our main website. And within 42, 46 hours, the chairman of the relevant parliamentary committee called the Bis, because you see, we have an action item. People can click submit and it sends an email off to the target, in this case, to the chairman of the committee. And the chairman started getting emails demanding a duty of candor and telling the story. And he himself personally called Mr. and Mrs. Bi after 35 years, and he said, Her Majesty's government apologize for the death of your daughter, and within the next 2 weeks, I will be moving in the Parliament of the United Kingdom to impose the duty of candor on the National Health Service.
Well, I say this, and I do believe that one person can make a difference, and the lesson of history is that they're the only thing that actually ever really has. The masses do nothing all the time. They never do anything. They only follow. They'll follow whichever shepherd you place in front of them, whether or not that shepherd leads them into greener grasses or a slaughterhouse. So, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you become your own leader, then you win by default because they don't want you to be a leader.
Now, would you like to ask me, Vinny, how many emails the chairman of this committee had received before he was catapulted to decisive action?
Try me.
I knew you would want to know. Take a guess.
7 million?
29. The first 29 people shook him so. I think he was afraid of more bad press because his party's been having mucho bad press. The first 29 emails shook him so badly that he called the Bis. Now, he's gotten lots and lots and lots and lots more. But that's how it happened. Now, we're not there yet. We're not home yet. We don't have that law passed yet in the Parliament. So we have to keep the pressure up. But 29 emails was sufficient to get that guy quaking in his damn boots.
Now, and that's also one of the best things about when people are held personally.
Yes.
He works for a corporation or a government as they get to pass the buck. But if you put one person's name there, one person's email address, this is the person who will go down if anything bad happens, scares the bejesus out of them. Once they're afraid, then they act in the people's best interest. They don't act in the people's best interest to start with because otherwise they wouldn't be in that position in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. So that personal threat, and we made no threat. We said, this is what we want, and this is what happened, and you must fix it. Well, he's a politician, and they've got elections coming up. And he was on that phone along with a representative of the National Health Service. How do you like them apples? homeopathic apples.
yeah. Okay, apple a day keeps the allopathic medicine away.
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing that I wanted to discuss just before we finish the show today. We've got about 3 minutes left in the broadcast. We were talking over the break about how hard it is to know these things that we know to somebody who doesn't believe you. That's really, really harsh. And I know there's a lot of people who listen to the show who are in that situation. And I used to be in that situation. Sarah's kind of woken up a little bit. Quite considerably. The first step that's I feel is major for waking up is quitting your slave job. Like, really. That's kind of the pinnacle when you know for a fact that you're no longer working for anybody else, when you actually start working for yourself and you no longer want to be told what to do. I think that's one of the key indicators that somebody's really woken up, but not just woken up, taken personal responsibility for their own life. And that can be very difficult if you're the one person doing that in a relationship. And my advice, you have to find friends who vibe with you, who get the same deal, so that when you go home and they won't listen to you or anything like that, it's not that bad. Because you can always just say, honey, I'm going out to go hang out with the boys or whatever. And you'll go there, you'll be accepted, you'll have a good conversation, and you'll come back refreshed. And it won't matter that that person's not going to listen to you because they'll see you being refreshed every single time you come back. They'll see you happier and more comfortable and more calm after each and every time. And eventually, when they see that, if they really love you, if they truly analyze how you're going in life, they'll start to listen, they'll start to believe you more, and then it's a slippery slope before you're actually fully woken up and start to become active.
Absolutely true.
It is inevitable.
It is inevitable. And, you know, there are relationships that are familiar and convenient and toxic. And sometimes it takes something like this to demonstrate that. And I know lots of people have said, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was hard, but I needed to leave that relationship. Or I'm so grateful that my partner has awakened and trusts me now and believes what I say. I consider myself deeply, deeply, deeply fortunate because my husband of 22 years initially trusted me but couldn't believe what I was saying because he was a career military officer and he kept saying, not my army, not my government. And then once the doorway was open for the information to start coming in, he understood and he's become an incredible partner in this journey that we're on. He's the president of the Natural Solutions Foundation. He understands that he was a useful idiot. He was a dupe. And he was used by the system. But now, he's also doing the same thing that I am and that you are, educating and changing things.
There is hope, ladies and gentlemen. Don't become hopeless. Don't become apathetic. Just remember, hope springs eternal. You need no nourishment. You need no energy in order to have it. Just have it. Faith in humanity. Faith in the good in people. Faith that we will win through if we do not lay down.
Indeed, indeed.
We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Rima Labo, Dr. Rima Truth Report.com, also available on freedomslips.com.